song Poker.
You've gone very sort of Keith Richards here with the
really?
With the fabric. Yeah, you look like some sort of weird musical Bedouin.
Yeah, I think that would pretty much accurately describe how I'm... I think, actually, I went out this morning with my partner and she considers what I'm wearing now to be... what was the word she used? Eccentric. Because I'm wearing sort of green trousers and...
You're sort of like London, not London standard, but you know, you would belong in London, but you're not there.
I'm not. And that's kind of fighting talk, isn't it, in a sense, you know?
Is it?
I don't know. You know,
do you want to fight me?
No, I certainly don't. But you belong in London, that's...
Well, you're more culturally at home in the capital, I would suggest. You are an outlier in Colchester.
I think that's maybe true. Anyway, how are you?
I'm very good. My wife is back from an incredibly long 3.5 week holiday.
Ah.
So I'm sort of learning to be socialised again.
Yes.
And that's all very nice.
Have you had a wash in preparation for her return?
There was a shower on... What day would it have been? There was a shower.
Right. So you've made an effort.
Let's not sort of probe into the details because I'm woefully short on detail, as we will discover during our chat. But so that's all good. And what day is it? It's Friday today, so it's Veterans Day.
Right.
So I'm celebrating Veterans Day by going to the dentist later on. And then it's music bingo tonight at Saints Row. So
how does that work?
So basically it's like the easiest pub trivia game kind of activity you can imagine.
Yeah.
Pooja plays a song. She then tells you what the song is. And if you've got that song on your bingo card, you can knock it off. And once you've knocked off all the songs, you win a free pint.
Although so it's a way of keeping you in the bar for... You know,
basically, yes.
For a long time. Right.
It's about 2 hours of... and it's like American radio. It's always basically the same 20 or 30 songs in permanent rotation.
Yeah.
All of which sort of basically come from the 80s, unless it's very specifically a different decade is the theme of the round. But
right.
Normally it's I Want to Ride My Bicycle or We Are the Champions.
Yeah.
Phil Collins, Aerosmith's first single.
Bingo. Bingo.
Well done.
Yeah.
Oh, well done. But don't go. Have a beer. Have a beer. Quite content to offer you a beer with the time difference. It's not even 8 a.m. here, but I'm quite happy to crack open a beer and drink it on your behalf.
Thank you.
So how
has your week in music been? What have you...
My week in music, I have listened to, apart from the stuff I've listened to specifically for today's episode, I've been listening to... I'm going to actually have to open Spotify and look. So I revisited Angel Dust by Faith No More.
Mm.
I've been listening to a lot of... I don't know if it's pronounced Warhouse or Warhouse, but he's a Dutch gentleman who does this sort of rather brilliant stuff.
Mm.
And the most recent album by David Duchovny. By David Duchovny.
David Duchovny?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. What about you? What have you been listening to?
Well, this week I bought Hotter Than July by Stevie Wonder on vinyl from a car boot sale. I don't know the album. I bought John Wesley Harding by Bob Dylan, which again I didn't know. I didn't have it on CD either. And a Rick James album, which is really horrible, really horrible funk, which I love. and then, and just the radio, really. So,
Yeah, the radio.
And what kind of and what are you wanting to poke musically with your chubby little digits this week?
I thought we could song poke because we've been sort of, it's like a sort of once in a lifetime celestial event. Like a special eclipse that involves all the planets. But in the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've had new music, not only from the Rolling Stones, but also the Beatles. So I thought we should talk about that new music, what we have had.
We should do, really, because no one else is talking about it.
Absolutely not. And we wouldn't want it to pass without comment.
No, we need to commemorate it somehow, don't we, by just giving our tuppence worth.
Yeah, we need to respond to it as the intelligentsia, which is you, and
the proletariat. Sort
of, yes, yes. Mm. The sort of person who will admit to listening to a David Duchovny.
Yeah, please tell me what you think of the Beatles.
There's a lot of overlap.
You are, if I'm remembering correctly, you're not actually a big Beatles fan, are you?
I'm not a big Beatles fan. I appreciate them rather than enjoy them.
Oh, God. Right.
You know, some of their music's very good, I'm sure, but emotionally I don't connect with any of it, really.
Do you connect with anything emotionally? By that, I mean also your wife.
Pies.
Right.
Snickers. Yeah, no, I have never had the Beatles horn.
Okay.
As 'twere. Have you? Are you a big Beatles man?
I am, although I think much of my childhood was listening to Rolling Stones. My dad was a huge Rolling Stones fan, and courtesy of him, I still now have a complete collection of vinyl, first edition vinyl.
Is it complete? Have you bought Hackney Diamonds?
So I have bought Hackney Diamonds on vinyl, yeah.
Excellent.
And I have Bigger Bang on vinyl. Blue and Lonesome, though I don't like it. So actually he stopped collecting by the late 70s, I'd say. So I had to sort of fill in the gaps when he died and I stole his records. Things like Steel Wheels. Oh, what's that dreadful one with... Dirty Work. You know, the one with Harlem Shuffle on it, where they're all wearing day-glow suits on the front. I've sort of patched up my holes.
Right, you've applied the wattle and daub of 80s and 90s Stones.
The Charlie Wattle and...
and daub Wyman.
Yeah.
To the otherwise perfectly good wooden structure of Richards and Jagger.
Yes.
So
what do you want to start with? Let's preface this as well also by saying that, you know, we'll come back and talk about the Stones' body of work.
Absolutely,
later on,
yes.
The Beatles,
yes.
If you can bear
we'll do proper episodes on each of those behemoths of the recording industry.
Yes.
But for today's episode, we're specifically just going to talk really primarily about the new stuff.
Good.
Because we won't get the chance to do that again, I shouldn't think.
Yeah, sure. So, where to begin? Let's go Beatles, first of all, because there's only one track, isn't there?
All right, okay.
And it's, of course, called Now and Then.
Now and Then, with the artwork, I would say, designed by Moonpig.
Yeah, it's doing no favours to the song, is it?
It looks, I would go further, I would say that design looks like a piece of sugar.
Right.
I was going to say shit, but I thought, do we want to swear on Song Poker?
Swear at any point.
No, that would be terrible. So it looks like a piece of absolute arse piss. I don't know who signed off on that. I'm guessing it was Paul McCartney. But yeah, that piss. I mean, obviously, we can't show it to you. This is a podcast. But if you haven't seen it, if you haven't heard it, go to your music app of choice or go to a music purveyor, look at it with your face and recoil.
And this song has been long in gestation, hasn't it? Based on a 1977 demo that John recorded at home. I think then the remaining Beatles back in 95, when the anthology was being put together, sort of did some work on it with Jeff Lynne from ELO.
Yes, that's right.
They shelved it and then got it back and working with the help of AI. And Peter Jackson doing the...
Mainly Peter Jackson, I think, who developed some sort of AI technology for isolating particular tracks. So the cassette was just John at his piano, and what they needed to do was kind of separate his voice from the piano.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do that until Peter Jackson made a film about magic dwarves.
Right, King Kong.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So he's done that, so they've made it, so they've finally been able to complete this song. So it's got... They said it's got all four of the Beatles on it, but I watched a little documentary on HBO, which sort of seemed to imply that actually all the guitars were Paul McCartney, and that George Harrison had kind of laid down stuff that was kind of used as a reference point.
I don't
know if you're actually listening to George or you're listening to Paul playing what George recorded.
The video does suggest that there's, you know, that George is playing the guitar on it in that session for the filming of the anthology. That's interesting. Yeah, maybe they didn't use him. I mean, he was never a very good guitarist, was he?
Well, I mean, you know.
I joke.
In that band. Look, what were the... So in the mid-90s, when the anthology came out, there were two new Beatles singles then.
That's right.
Free as a Bird.
And Real Love.
And the Real Love, that's right. Now, Real Love, I have heard it, probably not since 1995. Mm. I can't remember a thing about it. But would you say that... Now and Then is of a piece with those two other songs in terms of, you know, sort of quality sound, what they add to the band's legacy?
I would absolutely say that they belong as a sort of triumvirate, really.
Now, is that damning with faint praise, or do you really like Real
I like all of them. I like all of those three songs, yeah, despite Jeff Lynne's involvement. Yeah. I do quite enjoy the production on it. Yeah. And I love... that extracted Lennon vocal as well, and that sort of primitive sound to it. I really enjoy. There's a sort of rawness about it, and yeah, it's very emotional. Now, you know, when the Beatles machine kicks in, they really do know how to sort of deliver nostalgia, give good nostalgia, don't they?
They're a nostalgia delivery system.
They
sure.
are. Yes, indeed. That was the that was the phrase that I was racking my brains for. Yeah.
So you think it's a good song?
I do. I think it's a lovely song, yes. I mean, okay. You know, I don't think I would put it up there in the canon of their greatest, but I do really enjoy the song, and I think the video is mostly brilliant also.
Now, there's an area that I don't know anything about because I haven't seen the video.
Right.
What happens in the video?
Well, it's expertly put together. It's composited by Peter Jackson from various footage of the Beatles, sort of bringing them all together in one room, but at different ages and different phases. And there is new footage of Paul singing at the mic, and somewhat jarringly, Ringo is also standing singing at the mic. There's a lovely shot of him playing drums next to himself playing drums, you know, 60 years previous. Or 50 years maybe. Him standing singing.
I think he's got ideas above his station, it sounds like, because he's very much sitting at the back trying desperately to keep time. I don't think he's...
I finally sort of got... I mean, I just made one about George Harrison not being a very good guitarist. I find this very difficult to do. I find it very hard to find the humour in denigrating of the Beatles.
Well, you know, some would argue the Beatles have had, I would say broadly, a good innings commercially. They've sold a lot of records.
They've been lauded.
Yeah, so... They are in a position where if they can't take a bit of, you know, affectionate criticism from two, let's be honest, lesser musicians.
Yeah, meaningless individuals.
Yeah.
Inconsequential.
Yeah. If they can't withstand that, then I'd say they're you know, curiously fragile of ego.
I think you're absolutely right. Okay, as you were. So do you like the song, or does it just wash over you like a gentle John Lewis commercial?
It hits me like a sort of late period Oasis song. It's just there, and it does what it does, and it sounds like all the rest of them, and it does nothing new. And this song in particular is kind of curiously devoid of any of what I would describe as the kind of magic of the Beatles' music.
You see, I think they've, again, the Beatles' machine has gone, but they really have doubled down on the magic, haven't they? I mean, it's...
Have they?
It's, I think so. I think it sounds...
I mean, is the magic just the orchestration?
Well, it's okay. So I guess you need to have a little bit of context behind it, and the idea that it is their last recording and the last thing they'll do together. So perhaps what we're hearing is people's sort of, I don't know, relationship to the Beatles themselves. I don't know.
I mean, maybe half the magic is the technical magic that led to the song's completion. Maybe it's a miracle of science, not a miracle of art.
Maybe.
I mean, you know, we should be wary as well of being too premature with saying this is the last song they'll ever do. Because next time Yoko is, you know, putting the feather dust around, she opens a different cupboard and finds another cassette with more demos on it, suddenly we're looking at potentially a new Beatles album. So, you know, it's quite maddening to think that while this is, let's be honest, very probably their last song, it isn't necessarily. I mean, it's like Queen, you know? They're always capable of coming back at you with something else they've decided to inflict on the world.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I mean, it does feel like an act of closure, though, doesn't it?
It feels like it,
you know, unless there is something else that is as wistful sounding, as sort of poignant as that, then... Yeah, because they could have unearthed some sort of, I don't know, some recording from 62 of them covering a Chuck Berry song. I don't know. We've never heard that, but it wouldn't be quite the sort of the same send-off, would it?
I don't know. I mean, I suppose this comes down to a sort of fundamental question about the remaining Beatles as artists and as old men, which is that if they did stumble across a perfect... albums worth of new material from Lennon, would they turn it into a Beatles album out of muscle memory, or would they just say, we've retired, let it be? You know, it's do they just keep going on and on and on because they can, or do they say, full stop, let's enjoy retirement?
And it could segue us nicely into the Stones if you wanted to move on, unless you want to talk some more about Now and Then.
Yeah, well, before we get to the Stones. Mm. I just wanted an update on how you're getting on with your secret clandestine affair with Taylor Swift.
Yes, that has yet to materialise. I believe she's gone over to South America now, and I looked into flights to Buenos Aires.
Right.
And they're really expensive. And I've just, last week... don't know if you remember, but I had a baby. Genuinely, you know, little Kitty was born, you know, a week ago. And so I just don't know whether it's the done thing to fly to Buenos Aires and try and develop a relationship with a billionaire pop star whilst I've got Kitty at home.
Yeah, and a partner.
And her.
Yeah. Well, that's disappointing. So how much exactly, because I'm not, you know, I'm not calling you tight-fisted or anything, but how much were the flights to Buenos Aires?
Well, I'm looking at... You know, about 700 for the flights, but then I've got to stay in a hotel, and unless I'm really quick and I can stay in Taylor's hotel, but also just getting into the.
I would have thought she'd let you. Yeah.
Okay, but then just to get to the venue, these people in Argentina have been queuing for 5 months, literally for tickets to her show. They're on the streets, like queuing. And so, am I expected to go over there? I just don't think you thought this one through.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't really think it through logistically. I was leaving all that up to you because your history of bedding international pop sensations is probably better than mine. I don't know.
Well, there was that time with Kim Appleby.
I was going to say, think very carefully because, you know, you will get sued. You specifically, you will get sued.
Yeah.
I'm going to be very careful and pick someone who can't counter sue me. Oh, God, all I can think of is Christine.
Janis Joplin.
She'd do.
Yeah.
No. So is it... So what I'm hearing, basically, is you can't be asked to have a secret affair with Taylor Swift.
At the moment, while she's on a different continent, I think that's it's not viable.
Do you know how long she's down there for? Because we were looking at a sort of holiday to Mexico, taking in Chichen Itza.
Oh, really? I don't know. I mean, I can look at the tour dates. I'll probably just ping her an email and say, hi, Taylor, how long do you go down there for?
Yeah, ask her how long she goes down for.
Yeah.
Okay. And if it's an interesting number, if it works for me, maybe I'll go and pop down there and
get in on the action.
Well, you clearly can't be asked to do it. I think we need to do it to add listeners to the show. So I'm happy to, you know, take one for the team and But you can't be bothered. That's fine.
No. It's a challenge then. First one to date Taylor Swift is the bigger man.
Okay. We've talked about the new song from the Beatles. You really like it. Mm. I've heard it. Let's talk about Hackney Diamonds, the new album from What Remains of the Rolling Stones.
Yes. It's always exciting when a new material from a band such as the Rolling Stones materialises. I had my doubts as to whether there'd ever be one again. I mean, so their last album was in 2016, Blue and Lonesome.
Nothing.
But it was an album of covers. So we're going back to a bigger bang in 2005. And, you know, we were barely born then.
That's very true. I was still in nappies drinking milk from my mother's breast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, it wasn't my mother.
Anyway, we were about 30.
Yeah. And I was whoever's breast it was. Mm. I don't remember now. But no money changed that. Well, actually, that's not true. It was quite... expensive. Mm. It was a long time ago since they released original material.
It is. So,
and you weren't expecting any more.
I wasn't expecting any more. And when it was announced, I don't know if I was expecting great things. Bigger Bang was slightly disappointing. Going back to Bridges to Babylon was 97. And there were maybe a couple of singles that I quite enjoyed from that album. But it's not since 1994. Was it 94?
94, Voodoo Lounge.
Voodoo Lounge. And I know we both used to listen to that album quite a lot. I do really enjoy most of that album. So that's
a
long
time. Yeah, I think it's
a great record. Hilariously, I was thinking the other day that in terms of years, Voodoo Lounge should be now considered mid-career Rolling Stones.
I know, right? It seemed like this incredible outlier that this kind of legacy historical band had bequeathed like one final capstone record.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, it's just halfway through the calendar of their discography. So I want to ask you a question.
Yes. Sorry, because we're not supposed to be talking about their older albums, are we?
We absolutely can. But I thought of something I wanted to ask you, and going to stick to that in a sort of bloody-minded... I'm basically Paxman at this point, and I'm going to force you to hear this question.
Yes.
Think about it and answer it. So you can be Mick Jagger or you can be Keith Richards. It makes no odds.
Thank you.
How many Stones albums have there been? About 40?
I mean,
I'm not asking you to name them all.
With original studio recordings. I'm not sure. Anyway,
let's say for the sake of argument, let's say there were 30 or 40.
Yeah.
And when you made
Hackney Diamonds.
They were going to make you...
Hackney Diamonds is the 24th British studio album.
Oh, right. That's not so many. But it doesn't really affect my point. It merely makes it more accurate.
So, carry on.
All the previous albums you've made, your entire body of work, was created on the understanding that people would buy the record and you would make money.
Mm.
Do you think Mick and Keith went into this record cognizant of the fact that there was going to be no financial return on it and they made this record anyway? Or Do you think that they're expecting their fans to physically buy the album? And are their fans? Because you did. And I imagine a lot of their fans are old enough to still quite like having physical media.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think's going on there?
Well, I think I think most artists understand that their recording over is not going to make them a great deal of money, but their revenue is going to come from other sources.
T-shirt sales on the tour.
Yeah. So there's So actually, the album is probably just a sort of augmenting the tour promotion.
Exactly. It's justifying doing another tour.
Mm.
You know, because otherwise it's like with many bands that I like, who you can go and see every couple of years, but you're not necessarily always going to hear a new song. And I think what this does, because I don't know how long it's been since the last Stones tour, but probably 5, 6, 7 years. They seem to be fairly active, ironically, for men of that age. So I imagine they've always been sort of planning to do another tour, and this album justifies doing that. And I think will, or potentially could, even bring new fans to a Stones gig.
But it must also be about the music. They seem like they've had fun with this. It's a fun album. You know, Angry, the lead single, is, I don't know, I think it's a really good Stones song.
I would say it's one of the singles of the year for me. Mm,
yeah, Ingenious video with them, you know, Sydney Sweeney cavorting around in the back of an open-top car going through LA aside. There's these huge billboards where historic performances of the Stones seem to be performing Angry. I love it.
That's an excellent... For a song which is sort of narratively about a man asking why his equally aged wife doesn't sleep with him anymore, to get to a video narrative of Sydney Sweeney in a car driving through LA seems a bit of a sort of cognitive dissonance moment, but maybe not. I don't know. I
kind of wonder whether she should have been angrier rather than sort of
angry. Yeah,
yeah. She should have been looking up and looking cross at them rather than just
smiling. I imagine, or just sort of looking out,
being
dispassionately.
Sexy.
Yeah, performative pouting and what have you.
Yeah,
but they could have got Keith to do that.
They could have done.
If you're going to spend the money on Sydney Sweeney, get her to do her shtick.
Yes.
Yes. So speaking of shticks, there's a different drummer on this record.
For many of the tracks, yes.
Yeah. Do you know which ones have got Charlie on them?
Charlie Watts only plays drums on Mess It Up, which is the second single.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, is another good, fun track. And yep. Live By The Sword. Bill Wyman plays bass on Live By The Sword. So actually, Live By The Sword has got pretty much...
A full house.
A full roster, yeah. Yeah.
Why are they... It must have been a curious phone call. It's like, you're still out of the band, Bill, but we want you to come back and do one song.
Yeah, I think that was. I think that probably was how it went. Yeah, and there's a lot of people that are credited as additional personnel. Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, yeah.
Ben Montench, great keyboardist from the Heartbreakers.
Ben Tench. I thought that was the name of the monster in Starship Troopers 3.
No, he's the keyboardist in The Heartbreakers.
Easy mistakes to make.
Yeah. Elton's on it as well.
Yep. But Elton's on everything. I mean, there is something about this record that feels like a sort of recent Gorillaz album, in that you've got Stevie Wonder, Elton John, Lady Gaga, and Bill Wyman.
She's a rock star.
Now, if only they'd done a version of that, we'd have loved that. I suppose they, you know, they thought, right, this is the last song we've got Charlie drumming on, let's specifically get Bill back for that reason, to make this the last kind of classic Stones lineup song.
Yes.
Much the same way as Now and Then, but
just a nostalgia delivery system.
Yeah,
in full tilt.
If you don't mind me saying, that's a really good expression that you've coined there.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good. So Angry, I would say, is one of the great singles of the year. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the strongest praise, but then we're old and we only like five new songs a year now. The album as a whole is kind of kinetic and propulsive, and you can see why every song is on the album. Yes. There's nothing that kind of drifts along and you're looking at your watch going, I'll get on with it. And, you know, you have to ask where they got that kind of energy from. I mean, they're in their, what, early 80s, late 70s?
Yeah, well, Mick is, yeah, absolutely. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Now, his voice, it must have been treated, but it sounds so clear.
Yeah.
And so good and so energised.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't. I've got no idea because I've never been that old. Until I get there, I won't know. But I feel like, no, I won't. But you might. Yeah. And if not you, then your child. So we must ask the next generation to keep the quest alive. I don't know, creatively, if I'm still going to be at the top of the bell curve at that point or if I will, in fact, be on the downward slopes. And again, I'm not a musician, so I don't know if, you know. But we know from listening to interviews with Paul McCartney that voices change, deepen and get more gravelly the older you get. So Jagger sounds incredible.
Jagger does sound incredible. I mean, you know, Rod Stewart could not, you know, Roger Daltrey couldn't compete. I mean, God, they're singing, they're having to change songs down the octaves, aren't they now, when they're performing
like
live.
Kate Bush, yeah.
Mick does sound incredible. I mean, I don't think anyone's claiming that they are still at the zenith of their creative powers. I mean, that, you know, I think that was decades ago.
But in terms of this album as an enjoyable bit of art, I would suggest this is up there with some of their greatest stuff.
Do you reckon? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing, there are no kind of tracks on it that are as good as the obvious kind of classics.
Sure.
But in terms of an album you can listen to all of and enjoy it, that's not something they seem to have done for quite a long time. So there's a kind of tonal consistency.
That's true.
Which is, I would say, a very strong blend of what the album offers.
And so kudos should go to Andrew Watt, I suppose, in creating that...
In shaping it, yeah, kneading it.
Yeah, it's self-aware but really enjoyable.
Now, Keith, on the other hand, doesn't sound any different, and he hasn't sounded any different since that ancient recording of him in 1642 at that Mayan temple. Mm. His voice sounds exactly the same, even though he's off the cigarettes now, in a sort of last, very late life decision to try and get a bit healthy, you know. But again, Tell Me Straight is the sort of standard slow one that Keith does every album, and it's very enjoyable, I think.
It is, yes. Not quite the worst, as in
the
worst.
The song The Worst from Voodoo favorite. Lounge.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I suspect that if you just pump air through Keith Richards, that's the sound that sort of just that little bag is going to make. You know, it's kind of perforated. You pump enough air through that and you just get this nice melodic sound, you know.
Yeah, that's right, man. Yeah. What I would say, the first time I heard Angry, I did laugh at the guitar solo, because that the first time you hear it, you think that's the guitar solo, and it's only with subsequent listens that it grows on you and you think, yeah, this is brilliant. But it begins with this kind of like one note, like someone's poked a bore.
I love it. It's
sparse, and that is, you know, the beauty of it. But it did make me laugh first time I heard it. I mentioned that purely in passing, because what I really wanted to talk about was Bite My Head Off, featuring Paul McCartney, or Feet, I should say, because we're talking about music. Feet Paul McCartney, who, you know, he's been a busy lad lately,
he
hasn't
he? Isn't he? Yeah.
Two songs, wow.
Indefatigable.
Yes. Mm. He's like a force of nature, if that force is sort of a shuffly old man who plays two guitar parts a year. And probably Glastonbury as well. I don't know what he's doing. He's busier than I am, let's be honest. He's more important than I am. But I think that's the weakest point on the album for me.
Oh, okay, yes.
So, and I'm not sure
you're saying the Beatles' influence dilutes the Rolling Stones' greatness.
I'm absolutely saying that, yeah. It sounds like a sort of modern, in terms of the instrumentation, a modern version of a early 60s or late 50s kind of song, with not the strongest lyrics, and the whole thing, I think, just combines to slightly underwhelm. But it's still, you know, if I was going to sit here and give each song a score out of 10, it's still going to be a 6. Mm. So it's not bad. Are there any bits of the record that don't work for you so well?
I don't really enjoy Sweet Sounds of Heaven, although they seem to have been sort of wheeling that out for the live promo.
It doesn't sound like a Stone song, really, or it's not the sort of song I'm used to them doing. I mean, I like what Gaga brings to it. Mm. It would have been better if it was maybe just her.
Maybe, yeah. Mm.
But I do love the bit where Jagger's singing Let No Woman or Child Go. It's like he says, let no woman or child go hungry tonight. And it's like, is he saying he's forgotten the word tonight? Tonight. Or does he mean hungrier, comma, tonight? I think
he is, you know, as we say, 81, you know. He's probably struggling.
You'd expect bits in the back of the mix where you can just hear someone going, where are my keys? Or I've forgotten what I came in here for.
Yeah, on the next tour, it'll be brown sugar.
Three lumps, please, and
jumping jack.
Someone will come on and, you know, empty their bags halfway through the set. No, but apart from that song, which is a good song, just I think a bit of an outlier for them as a band. Mm. The last thing I would bring up is I really like the album artwork. There's a sort of nice design of like a diamond heart being stabbed by, I'm guessing, the devil, someone with slightly red hands. And I think that's every bit as evocative and appropriate and befitting and exciting that the Beatles album or single artwork is not.
Oh, that's interesting. I've not been a fan of many of the Rolling Stones album, the artwork, actually. I can't think of the last one that I actually thought was half decent. Tattoo You from, when was that, 81. I've not really enjoyed their artwork too much, but I don't think it matters.
No, the album artwork is there as a conversation point, not really part of the music. So anyway, the Stones, I'd love to hear more from them. It sounds like they want to make another record quite quickly, so that's genuinely quite exciting. The Beatles, I'm happy to draw a line under them now. If you are, if I get your sign off.
So it's down to me, is it? I have final say as to whether the Beatles should continue or not.
You wield the gavel, sir.
Okay. Well, okay, let's welcome another Rolling Stones album in the next 5 years, and let's draw a line under this thing we call the Beatles and say that they've had their day.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds hateful to me.
Song Poker was produced by Electric Sodcast Studios.